Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone, episode 37. My name is Kieran Tavam, and as always, I'm joined by my good friend out in the United States, JJ Duke. JJ, how are you, mate?
Yeah, I'm good. Seems that things are almost kind of wrapping up a little bit, which is sort of sad, but at the same time, almost we get to look ahead to what is to come, because we've got a lot of big things on the horizon.
Absolutely. This show is packed, so we're going to crack right on. In the opening parts, we're going to be discussing the FAWSL. Of course, Manchester City Women finally wrapped up the title with a game to spare, so we have some reaction from the Academy Stadium. I was there in Manchester at the weekend. We will cover off the NWSL. There is, of course, now the regular season completed. We look ahead to the playoffs that are occurring this weekend. Jasmina Schweinler will give us a brief overview of what's going on in the German Frauen Bundesliga. And we have a couple of interviews as well. One with Freya Alexandersson, who is the Iceland women's national team coach. And I also caught up with former NWSL defender stroke striker Amanda Frisby, who is currently playing her football out in Iceland at the moment. We'll also have a very quick overview of Euro 2017 qualifying, which was completed last week. So without further ado, after this break, we will cover off the FAWSL.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So, welcome back. JJ, I'm sure you saw over the weekend, it's been in the pipeline for a while. Manchester City Women have won their first FAWSL 1 title. Congratulations to them. And they did it by beating Chelsea, their nearest rivals, 2-0. Comprehensive, one game left. Looks like they may go the whole season undefeated.
Yeah, I guess we can almost bring that Invincibles crown to them. I mean, look, this is almost, I think I said it in either the last show or the show prior, it's a coronation, let's be real. I mean, they have dictated this league this season from start to finish. They score almost, you know, what, 3 goals a game thereabout. They've conceded just 3 goals on the entire season. They have depth. They've got talent. I think, you know, it's really just a whole coming together, and you have to give credit to that organization. They set their mind when they came into the WSL a couple of years ago saying that we want to be the best right now, and they did that. They spent, they got, and they delivered, and that's really all you can ask for a team that wants to be the best.
Yeah, I think credit to them as well. Eyes on them right from the off when they rebranded as Manchester City Women. They were, of course, Manchester City Ladies playing in the lower divisions. As you rightly say, they've invested, but it's not just investment on the pitch, it's investment off of it as well. They've been able to offer facilities that are second to none, which has allowed them to attract the best players. But I put a tweet out. I think they deserve a lot of credit. I think Steph Horton deserves a lot of credit for the way that she's captained that team and the ambassador that she's been on and off the field. And the players have bought into the philosophy of Coach Nick Cushing as well. They have gone out and they have wanted to bring in players that have a particular mentality, a particular personality that would fit in. And they've got the right blend of players. And they've shown that with the performances on the pitch. And I said it to a colleague in the press box after the game. There is a real chance that this City team could go on a run similar to what Arsenal did when they dominated the National Premier League.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, you look at it at both kind of sides. When Arsenal was making their run, it was still very much a you know, football atmosphere at the time that wasn't comparable to it is now. You had Arsenal as the top team, and then you had a significant drop-off. Now, coming into that full-time or close to it full-time professional era, you have City that are just loaded with not just England world-class players, but players from around the world that are playing at the highest level, playing for their national teams, starters within their national teams. And, you know, That's one of the tougher rosters to crack up and down. I mean, you had some players that weren't even suited up for that match that could start for probably the other 8 clubs or the majority of those 8 clubs that didn't see a whole lot of time this year. But, yeah, no, you're right. Credit to Nick Cushing for getting his squad in the right mindset coming into the season, because that was the only way that they were going to win, is knowing that from the start that they're going to be the best. And it reflected that way on the pitch.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned some of those players that were on the bench and came on. Daphne Corbos, who many in the United States will know from her time in the college system, she came on right at the end. I've written a piece for Equalizer Soccer if people want to have a look. But I also got some reaction from some of the players during the media scrum. So you'll hear now briefly from first Izzy Christensen and then Captain Steph Horton.
Is it 4,000 over 4 in Brisbane here today? How important have fans been this season to guide you to the trophy?
Absolutely incredible. No words can describe how brilliant they've been from start to finish. They've supported us through some bad times, and now they're getting the good times. And like I say, to get 4,000 people in the stadium today is unbelievable, and I really hope that can continue.
On a personal level, is he starting the season injured and then coming here now, seeing the crowd around you, a league title winner, how does that feel?
Unbelievable. It's part of the game to get part of the game is getting back up again, and it's a real honour for me personally to play in this team, and like you say, putting a performance today which I think proved why we are worthy champions.
And once again showing your strengths, goals and clean sheets. We've been doing it all season.
Yeah, again, something we pride ourselves on. We take a lot of time in our preparations to focus on defending and stopping the other team scoring, and likewise at the other end, creating chances and scoring goals. And we've got players all over the park that can do that for us. And obviously a 2-0 convincing win over the previous holders is a real benchmark for us, and obviously we're absolutely delighted.
So there's more to come. How good can this team get?
I think we're only going to get better. Like you say, we're just going to take each game as it comes, and I think attacking wise, as a group of players, we've been disappointed with our performances of late. We perhaps haven't been converting and creating as many chances as we know we can, but that's a really good place to be. It's a hungry group of people, and like you say, hopefully we can take a bit more of an attacking form into Europe with us.
How important is it in terms of a lot of eyes on Man City over the last few years, especially when they were promoted into WSL1 at the expense of Doncaster? Answer that, maybe not with the critics, but in terms of the pressure that has been on you, how has it been from your perspective dealing with that?
It's something which I personally welcome, and it's something that this team absorbs really well, pressure. I mean, we play at this fantastic stadium, like you say, in front of 4,000 people today. There's pressure on us. There's pressure on us by the club to succeed, because we invest heavily in it. Like you say, it's something which we as a group of players, I think, take with a pinch of salt. We're very grounded people, and we work exceptionally hard on and off the pitch. And I think that success of this team is only going to get better, and we're excited for the future.
You won it before, obviously, with Arsenal, but what's it feel like to be a winner for the first time with Man City, of course?
It tops them too, because I feel as though I've been involved with every single game. I'm captain of the club, I've been here since day one, and it's a special feeling, but I'm delighted for all the girls and all the staff, because I see how hard everybody works, and behind the scenes every single day, and how much sacrifice you do make. So to come here and win it in our home ground in front of 4,000 fans was unbelievable.
3 years, tremendous progress in the 3 years that you've been here, of course.
Yeah, of course. I think the first year to come away with the Continental Cup was a fantastic achievement for us, and we were so close to win the league last year, but to get Champions League qualification and now just to go one more better, we're heading in the right direction. We're just going to make sure we maintain it, but that's down to a lot of good people within the club.
That direction, Arsenal, club we played for before, were just totally dominant for 10, 12 years. Could City become as dominant, or getting into it?
I'd like to think so. I mean, I probably won't be playing for 10 or 12 years, but I mean, it's got the foundation to be like that, and we can attract players from abroad, and we can grow our own. The likes of Georgia Stanway's played an instrumental part within our squad, and it's unfortunate that they can't be here, but I think for us as a club, it's just on about now going to concentrate on the Continental Cup final, and we've got Champions League, of course, as well. So we've got some very exciting things to look forward to, and of course, lifting the trophy against Birmingham.
We were at that launch, Steph, over the bridge at the Etihad a few years ago. Has it surprised you how quickly you've been able to put in performances like this, winning a title, but also doing it in such a dominant fashion as well?
I don't think it's a surprise. It's because of how hard we do work on the training pitch, and we've got a top-class manager in Nick Cushion and his coaching staff. The amount of detail that they have to help us be the best, and we work at it every day, and we don't change the way we play, and we don't change for anyone, and that's been probably the most pleasing thing ever since day one. We still play the same way, but we've added better players, we've added good people, and that's why we've got the squad that we've got.
So that was Izzy and Steph. JJ, I want to wrap it up on Man City. Just want to have one very quick discussion on Doncaster Rovers Belles. We mentioned that City may well go this season undefeated. Doncaster Rovers Belles had a bottom of the table clash with Reading Women at home on Saturday. They would have seen that as an opportunity to try and get their first points on the board. They lost at home 4-1. We could see them go the whole season without a win. That is a real possibility.
Real possibility, and they could even go this entire season without a point, you know. And I'll be honest with you, I don't ever see Doncaster Rovers because, of course, it's only very limited amount of coverage that we get here in the United States, and I think the WSL needs to change that a little bit. I'll just leave that pedestal for the side for the moment. But, I mean, just their form. I mean, it's just it's bad loss after bad loss after bad loss. It doesn't look like, you know, from a far distance that there's any hope for that team to dig themselves out even a result, let alone a win. And I think, you know, it's unfortunate because I know people were coming in pretty high on them in the sense of that they could do enough to stay up. They had some players, obviously injuries, players leaving the club. That all hurts, but now it's right back down, and that's not an easy league now anymore. You know that, Kieran, WSL2, you have to grind to get through, to get back to the top.
Yeah, 100%, and that's being demonstrated in WSL2. You've got Bristol City Women, you've got Yeovil Ladies, you've got Everton, you've got Durham. There's a four-club race there for two positions. And if Doncaster are relegated, which it looks pretty much nailed on that they will be, it's not going to be easy for them to come up. They have had bad luck. We've said it on numerous occasions, the injuries to people like Courtney Sweetman-Kirk, the fact that Tash Dowie and Becky Easton walked out halfway through the season. They've not had it easy. I spoke to one of their players last week for a piece for an English newspaper over here, and it was Sophie Barker. And she said that despite everything, they have stayed incredibly positive and they are hopeful still of staying up. But I can't see it, mate. I think they're gone, and I think it's a real shame. But we'll have to wait and see. But on the other hand, good win for Reading. Their first of the season, Emma Follis, who's been on this show before, grabbed a double and she looked in fine form, scored a really good second goal as well. But we've got a lot to pack in. We will, of course, cover the WSL off in more detail in future shows. But I want to have a quick break, and then JJ, I want to have a very quick overview of what's been going on in Europe with the Euro 2017 qualifiers, because they came to a close last week. So we'll do that after this quick break.
Women's Soccer Zone, we'd like to thank our partners, She Kicks Magazine. Subscribe at shekicks.net for even more women's football.
So welcome back, JJ. Euro 2017 qualifiers. The whole tournament kicks off in mid-July in the Netherlands next year. We now know 15 of the 16 sides that will be competing. I'm going to run through them very, very quickly. So the top two teams in Group 1 were Iceland and Scotland. Group 2, Spain and Portugal, who will have to go through a playoff. That's Portugal, not Spain. Spain have topped the group. France and Romania are second in that group. They will be the team that plays off against Portugal as the two lowest ranked second sides in terms of points gained. Sweden and Denmark have qualified. Germany and Russia have qualified. Switzerland and Italy have qualified. England and Belgium have qualified. And finally, Norway and Austria make up the rest of the teams. And of course, the Netherlands automatic qualification due to being hosts. We'll go into the detail of the Euros in future shows, but when you hear the teams that have qualified, who's the team, maybe not that you see as favourites, but the team that you're excited to watch for next year?
I think it's kind of across the board right now. It's Scotland. You know, that's a team that may have the best player in the world, Kim Little. I truly believe that she is the best player in the world, or one of the best players in the world, that kind of pseudo-elite level status that people always talk about here in America for various sports. But you know, this is a team in Scotland that has come so close on so many occasions, whether it has been the Euros, perhaps having to go at it for World Cup qualification, but just falling short because of the limited amount of spots. Now the tournament expands to 16 teams. I think that is a very good number. I don't believe that there really needs to be any more than the 16. But it's a very good pool. You know, there's going to be some first-timers. But I think Scotland, I could be pretty excited about, you know, that depending on the group that they have, some of the players that they have within that team, you know, there is a chance they might get out into the quarterfinals.
Yeah, without a doubt. Much like we saw at the World Cup last year, there are teams that are going to be making their debut. And I'm really excited about seeing some of those teams. You know, Belgium, I was in Belgium last week to watch England. And despite England winning the game 2-0, I think they are a team that have got some really talented players. I spoke to Janice Kamen, who of course plays for the Western New York Flash, before the game, and she said it's a really exciting time for Belgium at the moment. You know, if qualifying for the Euros is a huge deal for them, and it could well be that it generates more interest. The stadium in Leuven that I was at, it was packed, mate. It was really, really clearly well attended. And they generated a really good atmosphere, so I'm excited to see how they will get on. Of course, Scotland, as you say, brilliant win for them in Iceland last week. They managed to inflict Iceland's first defeat of the whole qualification period, 2-1. Jane Ross in phenomenal form for Man City and phenomenal form for Scotland. She will definitely be a player to watch out for at the Euros next year, because if she's given the service, she is lethal in front of goal. And I think Denmark as well, mate. I said when the scores were coming through, you have one of the most lethal partnerships in Europe, Nadia Nadim and Pernil Harder. That is decent.
Scary. I mean, that's speed and finishing. I mean, talking with people about various types of strikers, the one type of striker that you hate to try and defend is the unpredictable one. The one that, you know, there is nothing easy about going at or trying to stop them, because you don't know exactly what they're going to do. Nadia brings, of course, a little bit of physicality to her play, but at the same time, a knack for the flair and also the willingness to do anything on the field to try and, you know, score the outlandish goal. Then at the same time, you have Pernille Harder, who I think it's almost kind of like you have that classic striker, speedy, you know, does fairly well in the air, can get herself wide at times, but then can cut back in and has a lethal shot. You combine those two together, and then, you know, you have very experienced players, and especially in defense for Denmark. I think, yeah, that's another, you know, I hate to use the word the dark horse, but I think that, you know, they could better their performance from the last European Championships, which is, of course, saying a lot as they got to the semifinals. But again, given the draw, you never know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I agree with you. I think they're definitely one to look out for next year. But you can say that about so many teams, can't you? I mean, hosts Holland, they've definitely improved over the last few years. Norway, we know about the attacking threat that they've got. For me, best striker in the world in Ada Hegerberg is leading the line for them. You know, there are teams that can really, really impose themselves on this tournament. England, I haven't even mentioned. You know, they went through the whole qualification period undefeated, and they will fancy themselves having won a bronze medal. You know, they were the best ranked team at the World Cup last year, so they will fancy their chances. But I mentioned them. And one of the teams I think we should look out for next year, they only suffered their first defeat in qualifying last week, and that was Iceland. And I was able to catch up with their head coach, Freyr Alexandersson. I think Iceland are, when you compare them to the men's side as well, they are massively improving. They have a ridiculously small population of 330,000 people, which means the pool of players they have to pick from is quite small. And yet, they qualify for another major tournament and do it in style. So I wanted to talk to him about what the secret is to the Iceland team's success in qualifying, and a little bit about the team that he's got available to him. So here's Freyr giving me a little bit of insight into the Iceland women's national team. So I am really pleased to be joined by the head coach of the Iceland women's national team, Freyr Alexandersson, who is obviously very pleased because his team will be participating at Euro 2017 in the Netherlands next year. Freyr, how are you?
I'm really good at this moment. I'm pleased that we have qualified in the first position of our group, and now we're just starting to prepare for Holland next year.
Tell me about the qualification. As you say, you finished top. You only suffered the one defeat, which came in your last game at home to Scotland. It was the only two goals that you conceded. I think you scored 34 in the group qualification. Tell me about what it was like being head coach of that team during this qualification period and how it was that you were able to be so dominant throughout it.
very happy with the progress of our team for the, especially the last 18 months. When we were drawn into this group, or before we were drawn, we aimed to win our group regardless which team would be in our pot. But still, when we saw the pot with Scotland, Slovenia, Belarus and Macedonia, we stick to our plan that we wanted to win our group, not only to qualify for the Euro and to get that results that we got and win the group with. Yeah, I mean, I think it was pretty well done by our team. I'm very happy with that. And like you said, we lost the last game against Scotland. It was a difficult game to play because we had already qualified, and mentally, I think we were not that strong in this match. But I want to mention that the Scottish team is good. The Scottish team has very strong players, and they are very experienced and have a great coach. So it's not that like that we were losing to a poor team. I have a huge respect for the Scotland national team.
No, they are very good and will obviously be joining you in the Netherlands next year. And you say how good they are. You went to Scotland earlier on in the qualification. Everyone saw that as being a really key match and a really close one. You went and won 4-0. Talk about that one, because that was a really impressive performance.
I agree on that. That was very impressive. And at that moment, it was a huge build-up before the game. We prepared very well. And we knew, like you said, it's a key game in the qualification. Going away to play Scotland, and we played one of our best games, probably the best games since I took over the team. And players just stick to our plan, were well motivated. And I think Scotland were a little bit shocked how well we played. And at that time, I saw how long in our process the team has gone. So it was a very joyful game, and I really enjoyed watching my players perform at this level.
And I'm sure, as you say, very joyful to watch, I'm sure. I mean, it wasn't just the fact that the team was so impressive. You had players that really stood up as well, didn't you? Hufper, Fornsteinsdottir was the top scorer in qualification. You had Dagny Brynjarsdottir, who was up there as well with 7. I think Hufper got 10. You must be really pleased with not just the team, but the fact that you have these individuals who step up for big games.
I'm very pleased with that. All those players you mentioned have been fantastic throughout the qualification, and all the players have been growing in high speed, I would say, because Dagny is always getting better and better, and Sara Björk now going to Wolfsburg is probably the best defensive midfielder in Europe, at least, in my opinion. Dagny is always a threat in the box, one of the strongest players in the aerial duels, both defensively and offensively, takes great runs, great athletic. And I mean, Harpa Thorsteinsdottir scoring all these goals, it's ridiculous that she has been playing in the Icelandic league for so long time. I really don't understand why clubs in Europe have not signed her yet. But at this moment, we have lost her because she's pregnant. So that's a huge miss for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. And you're right. I saw her record, lots of goals in the Icelandic league, lots of goals for the national team. Surprising that someone else hasn't picked her up. But talk to me about, you know, let's look a little bit at the bigger picture. Talk to me about how it is that Iceland are able to produce this competitive team. We saw over the summer how the men performed at the European Championships in France. They won over a lot of fans. They got through to the quarterfinals. The women's team are also making strides. How is it with a country that has such a small population, I think it's in the region of about 330,000 people, how is it that you're able to produce these competitive teams with such a small pool of players to pick from?
It's difficult to describe it, but it's of course a small pool to pick players from. It's also very beneficial to have that small pool, because we need to get the best out of every single player. So our youth development has been, we have worked on that for quite a long time now in Icelandic football, and we are developing both boys and girls. we started at the age of five, working with high quality coaches, and the clubs are doing a great job producing good players. Other thing is, at the federation, we are working close together, both the women's as women's coaches, the men coaches. I'm a part of the men's team coaching staff as a scout, and I'm helping them. And still, Heimir and Lars Lagerbäck, they have been involved in a lot of things that we have been doing, and we have a lot of discussions. So the togetherness is so much in Iceland. But I think the biggest factor is just this mentality that the Icelanders have, this hard work, and always this drive to be best in the world in everything we do. It's something that's just in our genes or something, but you can't find an Icelandic athlete that doesn't aim high, doesn't want to be one of the best in the world. It's just something that is in our genes, I think.
That's really interesting what you say about that close relationship that the men's team have with the women's team in terms of the coaching. How important has that been in development of the women's team?
It has been important, but it's also vice versa, because the women's team, they qualified first for the Euros in 2009 and then 2013. And the Federation, they learned a lot from that experience. And the Heimir Hallgrímsson, the national team coach now, he was involved in the Women's Euro 2013. So he was learning from that experience. And now when we got to France, he used some of that experience. I was there helping him, and now I have gained that experience from this Euro in France. So it's just, I think it's unique, and I think it's great that we are working together, and everybody is working towards the same aim. We want to get good results, and we are so proud to be playing for our country that everybody wants to take part and help each other in that.
A lot of the players in the squad play in the Icelandic League. I'm sure that you would like to see that Icelandic League get stronger, maybe bringing in players from abroad to help the young players that are developing in that league. But how important is it getting that balance between having a strong league in Iceland, but also having players like Dagny Brynjarsdóttir, like Sarah Björgunarsdóttir, who you've mentioned, who are going off to play in other countries and gaining valuable experience in other leagues?
It's very important that our best players are playing in good clubs around the world, in America and in Europe also. But of course, we need good league here in Iceland. And we have 50% of our national team players are still playing in the Icelandic League. And the league is okay. I mean, the best three teams would do well in Damallsvenska and definitely in the Norwegian top league. But still, we have regular starters in the Icelandic national team that needs now to go to the bigger club, I think, because it's also about the environment, all the pressure, and playing good matches every week. We need that to develop. So we are working towards that, and I mean, definitely three or four players that are starting regularly for the national team should be playing in top clubs in Sweden, Germany, or in the States. I'm 100% sure of that.
Well, it's a good sales pitch that you've given there. Maybe someone listening to this show will be in contact with some of those players. But looking ahead to the Euros next year, it's what, 9 months away from now? Where do you think your team is? What are the sort of things that you'll be working on? And how much of a chance do you think you've got to make a good impression at the tournament next year?
Like I said, we have been developing very well the last 18 months. So now we have 9 months to prepare. Everybody knows that Spain, France, Sweden, Germany, these teams, Switzerland, England, are definitely countries that are above us regarding strength and players that they can pick from. But still, I think no team in Europe has the same togetherness and mentality as the Icelandic team. So if we're going to do something special at the next Euro, we need to work very hard these 9 months. We need to develop our players as individuals. We need to develop our team, both tactically and also mentally, to go and try to do something special. But of course, we are not favorites. Maybe we are not favorites to go out from the qualification. But you never know. We can do anything. If you are lucky with injuries and the players develop well for the next month, maybe you'll be a surprise at the Euros.
Well, as I mentioned, on the pitch, very good. Off the pitch, your supporters during the men's tournament were praised for the atmosphere that they generated. Are we going to see the Icelandic, the clapping and the drummer? Are we going to see those in the Netherlands? Are we going to see a big Icelandic turnout?
Yeah, I expect that. We played now 2 home games, 4 days between, and we had 6,500 spectators at the games. Remember, we are only 330,000. For a women's game, having 6,500 at a game, 2 in a row, that's huge. So I would expect a lot of Icelanders going to Holland, and they will make something special happen in the stands.
Well, we look forward to that because they were superb in France, and hopefully we will see them in the Netherlands, as you say. Freya, it's been a genuine pleasure. Thank you for joining us on Women's Soccer Zone, and hopefully we will speak to you closer to the tournament and you can tell us how preparation is going.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Thank you, and we'll be in touch for sure.
Women's Soccer Zone, it's all about the players.
So big thanks there to Freya. JJ, I know you haven't heard that interview, but one of the key things that he said to the success of the Iceland team is the relationship that the women have with the men's team. He actually is a scout for the men's team. He works very closely with the men's coaches. The men's coaches apparently have a bit of involvement with the women's team as well, and that's why they're able to be successful and to really build on what they've got. I thought that was really interesting.
Well, combining resources, I mean, really, you can't ever go wrong, especially for a footballing nation like Iceland that has taken that, you know, sort of next step. They were there, you know, right on the cusp of qualifying for some major tournaments, but now all of a sudden here we are. You have the men, obviously, they're the story of Euro 2016. You know, you don't talk about that tournament outside of talking about the Viking chant, even though that's been around for a little while in various ways or another. But then you have the women's team, who's gotten themselves now, that's 3 straight European championships that they've now qualified for. They're building a stronger program. They're investing money in their youth. And I think that is really where it comes down to. If you can develop, have that pipeline there, you know, we even see it here in the U.S., especially at the college level, you know, you have Icelandic women's players that are playing here stateside. And, you know, they're not just going there to sit on the bench and learn. You're getting players that are starting for key programs, key minutes. Obviously, Dagny Brynjarsdóttir, we all know her. But here's one for you, Anna Maria Baldursdóttir, who's starting for Iceland's senior team right now. She plays at a center-back position for St. John's. She is one of the best defenders in the nation right now at the college level. So you have that investment in the youth, then only that means progression can go forward, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, it was a really interesting insight, so big thanks to Freya for coming on and giving us some insight into what's going on in Iceland. Staying in Europe, I had a quick chat with our German correspondent, Jasmina Schweimler, about what's been going on in the Bundesliga. So here's me speaking with Jasmina a little bit earlier on. Jasmina, you must be very happy as a Wolfsburg supporter because they got a very big win away at the champions Bayern Munich at the weekend. That's a big result, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. The last time Wolfsburg beat Bayern was in 2013, so it's been quite a while.
And what was the key to the win? I know the game was broadcast on the DFB website. I'm sure you saw it. What was the key for the Wolfsburg team to win this one?
Well, personally, I think it was a very even game. Both teams had quite a lot of chances, but this time I felt like, you know, I've been criticizing the lack of creativity a lot and that I don't feel like it was very organized, but this time I had actually a very good feeling. they seemed like they had ideas. They were very efficient. They attacked early. They put a lot of pressure on Bayern's defense, actually forced Bayern to defend deep in their own half. So, yeah, the individual quality in our offensive players was definitely a key factor. Alex Popp making the difference again, I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
She's class, no doubt about that. On her day, she is almost unplayable. I mean, I don't want to be biased.
She's a big time player, yeah.
Absolutely. I don't want to be biased towards Wolfsburg and Bayern, because actually they are, as it stands, fourth and seventh respectively. We'll talk on a future show about Bayern, because not the greatest start for them. One played three, only won one of those. But the team at the top, Turbine Potsdam, a team that we've been used to seeing at the top in years gone past, but have fallen away a little bit in the last few years. They won again at the weekend. They got a good 3-1 win away at Borussia Mönchengladbach. They're doing well. What's the secret? Why are they performing so well this year? Or is it a case of other teams are underperforming?
I think the thing is that Matthias Rudolf is actually trying out new things. You know, he's taking a risk. And I still think that putting Tabea Kemmer up front was the best thing he could do. I always felt like she had some kind of offensive drive, you know, always playing up front. So he's actually making use of it, and it's paying off. She scored again, so what could he ask for?
Yeah, 5 goals for her in the opening 3 games, according to the stats that I've got in front of me. So you're right, very, very shrewd move. I mean, we're keeping it very short this week because the show is very busy. But what's your overall perception of the league as a whole at the moment? 3 games in, as I said, Bayern underperforming at the moment with just the 1 win. Wolfsburg currently mid-table as well in 4th with 2 wins and a draw. Freiburg up there as well with Turbine Potsdam with 2 wins and a draw, along with Essen. So what's your kind of perceptions at the moment early on?
Well, I think I already said it, but the league stays unpredictable, and that's what makes it so exciting. You just, you know, who would have thought that Turbine Potsdam would lead the table? I certainly didn't. So I'm just very happy that the league stays exciting again, and it's not just 2 teams up front with Bayern and Wolfsburg. We have Essen, Turbine Potsdam, Freiburg. So, yeah, it's promising to be a good season.
And just a very quick one. The 2 German sides are in Champions League action next week. Wolfsburg have got Chelsea again. Bayern Munich play Hibernian. I know you probably don't know much about Hibs, but how confident are you that those 2 can do well in their first legs next week, both playing away from home?
I mean, I was pretty confident that Bayern would do well last season, but we all know how that ended. But I feel like now they are ready to, you know, take a step forward and perhaps make it to the next round. But I'm not so sure about Wolfsburg, because like I already said, they have a very tough task coming up with Chelsea. So, yeah, that's going to be a tough one, because Chelsea ladies are going to focus on Champions League now that they couldn't defend the league title. But I think our individual quality, like I said already, is going to be the key factor, and perhaps, you know, we will be confident enough and beat them.
Okay, well, we shall find out soon enough, and we will, of course, cover that off when we have you on the next show. Jasmina, thank you very much. Short this week, but no less sweet. So thank you. Enjoy the upcoming fixtures, and we'll speak to you soon. Okay, so big thanks there to Jasmina. I'm fully aware that we have neglected some of the European leagues over the last few shows. I do have Anthony Resch from Footdale booked in for the next episode, so he will be talking about what's going on in the French Division 1. And of course, England and France face off against each other on the 21st of October over here, so I want to talk to him about that. The Swedish league is very much a two-horse race, as we've discussed on previous shows. Linköping, though, in the driving seat, JJ, ahead of Rosengård. They are a point ahead and they have a game in hand. That would be a little bit of a surprise if Linköping managed to pull that one off, because as we know, Rosengård are the superstars of that division, but Linköping have their players and they have a really good core of Swedish internationals. They may well pull that one off.
Yeah, I think that would, you wouldn't put that down as the upset of the century right there, but as you said, you know, you look up and down Rosengård's roster, international, world-class player, international. Not to say that Linköping doesn't have the same caliber of roster. They have a fair few internationals, but they don't have the world-class household name stars that Rosengård does. So, yeah, that's going to be something that we'll have to keep a little bit more of an eye on, because you'd think both teams will qualify for Champions League very easily, but when titles are at stake, we find out a little bit more who the big players are.
Yeah, 100%. And as we know, Marta and Lotta Schelin lead the line for Rosengård. So you're right. It's going to be interesting, and we'll get Linda Eriksson on to talk about that for sure. Interestingly, Linköping and Rosengård play each other on the 9th of October. So that could well be the big decisive game. But we'll move on, and we need to go to the NWSL. The regular season has now finished, mate. We now await the playoffs, which take place this weekend. It will be the Portland Thorns, who was confirmed as Shield winners after their win at Sky Blue FC at the weekend. They will host the Western New York Flash, who confirmed their place after an easy 4-0 win at the Boston Breakers. And before that, on Friday, it will be the Washington Spirit, who suffered a defeat to the Chicago Red Stars away from home last week, which meant Portland were able to leapfrog them to win the Shield, and they will be hosting the Chicago Red Stars, who, of course, as I said, beat the Washington Spirit to confirm third place. It's going to be exciting, mate. I can't wait.
It's going to be fun. I mean, in one match, Washington versus Chicago, you've got it's a balance, really. It's tough to kind of take a whole lot away from that last match. I mean, fair play again to Chicago. They wanted to get themselves on the right foot heading into the playoffs. A win always helps. But Washington, knowing that coming into that week, you just almost kind of get through to the next week. You know, you're healthy, stay healthy. If you win, fantastic. If you don't, they already had the home match in the back pocket. So, you know, fair play to the Red Stars. They got the job done. Now they've got to go do it again. And it's always the toughest thing in sports, to beat the same team twice in the matter of 2 weeks. The other side of Portland, you know, they're starting to click on all cylinders. I talked with Mark Parsons recently, actually right before their match against Western New York. And, you know, it's a lot of how to stay the course with his team. You know, they've kind of adopted this mentality of the team first. They do whatever it takes to win the match there, you know, that's handed in front of them. It didn't really matter a whole lot which team that they're going to face, whether it was going to be Chicago, whether Western New York, or if Seattle, you know, defied the odds and snuck into that fourth spot. They're going to adapt. They're going to react. And, you know, I think almost honestly that matchup kind of fits a little bit better for them as opposed to Chicago. Their match against the Flash back on the 11th of September, they did jump out to that early lead. They let the Flash kind of get back into that one just a little bit, but Portland's 2-0 against the Flash this year. I don't see that changing much. As long as he can contain the width, which that field at Providence Park is just a little bit more narrow than Rhino's Stadium, then I think they'll get the job done and get to the final.
Yeah, I think you're right. If I was Portland, I wouldn't only just be pleased about the fact I've won the Supporters' Shield. I'd also be pleased to be avoiding the Chicago Red Stars. That's absolutely no disrespect to the Western New York Flash, but we have seen with the Flash some indifferent results here and there. And correct me if I'm wrong, they didn't come into that game against Boston in great form, did they? I think they was it six or seven games they'd gone without a win? Correct me if I'm wrong on that one.
Yeah, you know, they kind of form slumped at the end, and they had plenty of chances to put it, you know, away. Late, they had to fight back to get a draw against Houston back in late July, and the same in August. They let Houston kind of get into that. That match against the Spirit at the beginning of September, I think that was kind of give or take. But I think the real message was the Boston game back on the 7th of September.
Yeah, I agree.
You're playing the Breakers. With the greatest of respect to them, that should be a match that they should easily handle. They didn't, and they put themselves in this position. Now, credit to them, they got a result, but now they're going to have to go to Portland on the road, face probably 20,000 people, and try and, you know, they have to love being that underdog. They have to, you know, bring that to themselves, grasp it, and play that card. Because if they can, then, you know, they're going to be in it. But they can't be trying to chase a goal within the last 5 minutes.
I no,
that's
absolutely.
Going to be their big one.
Absolutely. And as I was saying, you know, I think for Portland, it's not just about winning the Shield. It's about avoiding the Chicago Red Stars. Because as we see in the playoffs, anything can happen. The last time the Red Stars were in the playoffs, it didn't go according to plan. And I think they're a good side, mate. I like Chicago. I think they have a really good balance across the field. I think, you know, going to Washington, that one's hard to call. That one's really, really hard to call. I think for me, Portland maybe beats Western New York by maybe two. I can't call Washington Chicago. For me, that one's much harder.
You know, and it's interesting because, again, I also asked Mark about the whole Washington-Portland dynamic, whether that being him meeting, you know, basically his old team in the final. But he told me flat out that Washington support, that is also a second to none support. And you look, and so first, before you do anything, people are going to look at the numbers. Well, Portland's got a 20,000, you know, average support, you know, per game. Washington's got 4 or 5. You have to look at the stadiums, obviously, two different things. But going to Washington, man, that is a lot of passionate people, and it's been that way for a long time. Even when the Freedom were playing back in the old WUSA days, if you're playing well, they're behind you. If you weren't playing well, they would let you know that you weren't playing well. Now, granted, that's not like saying it's a bad thing. They're always going to support the team, but they want success. They are hungry for success, and I think that's going to be nice little intangible for the Spirit, playing at home, playing on their field. And Chicago, you know, they kind of left it a little bit late on their own. I thought that they're going to be a top-two team this year. They're third, which is, you know, again, job done there in the playoffs. But, you know, they let a few results slip at the beginning and middle part of the season, which then the tables could be flipped and they could have been hosting this match. So I think the small intangible goes to Washington, that edge. I think we see a 1-2 again in the final.
Yeah, well, we shall see. Anything can happen in the playoffs. I'm really excited about it. I'm obviously, from a British perspective, I'm intrigued by Paul Riley against Mark Parsons. And Paul Riley going back to Portland, you know, this was a guy who went to Portland as head coach, was expected to get them into the playoffs, and funnily enough, he ends up in the playoffs, but against them. So that's going to be fun to watch. And Washington Chicago, certainly a game I'm looking forward to. I really like watching both teams. I think it's going to be an intriguing couple of matches. We will do a bit of a review of the NWSL in a coming show, and we'll pick our player of the season, rookie of the season. Obviously, the awards are due to be announced next week, but we will do our own Women's Soccer Zone awards and kind of have a chat about who we think were the standout players and coaches, etc., etc. But I think we'll wrap it up there, mate, on the NWSL. But before we go, I did catch up with a former NWSL defender and forward, and I caught up with Amanda Frisby, and one of the reasons I wanted to chat to Amanda was because I think she'd admit, and she does admit in the interview, that the NWSL career that she had probably wasn't one that she expected, wasn't one where she maybe got the chances that she would have liked, and was obviously quite badly hampered by injuries. And she's gone and moved to Iceland for a short period. She's playing for a team that's currently top of the table, and she's got a really big game coming up at the end of this week. So I wanted to catch up with her, see how she's getting on, and also to talk about the difficulties that she had in the NWSL. So really interesting and honest interview from Amanda. So do sit back and have a listen. So here she is. Right, I would like to welcome onto the latest edition of Women's Soccer Zone a player that I met a couple of years ago, but it's the first chance that I've had to interview her. I'd like to introduce American defender stroke forward Amanda Frisby. Amanda, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm all right. So for the sake of the interview, do you want to be called Amanda or do you prefer Frizz?
Oh, Frizz. Gotta stick to Frizz. Everyone calls me Frizz.
Excellent. That's what I like. We like to keep it informal on this show, so Frizz it is. So, Frizz, the last that many will know of you is the time that you had in the NWSL, but of course, since you and I met in Seattle a couple of years ago, you've moved around a little bit, but you currently find yourself in Iceland playing for Stjarnan. Now, you told me the pronunciation of the club before we came onto recording. I hope I'm close, if not spot on. Now, we're actually So coincidentally, I didn't actually know this because I've not prepared as well as I should have done, but you actually have your last game of the season coming up at the end of this week, and if you win, you claim the league title. Tell me how it's been settling in and what you've kind of found with the Icelandic league.
Yeah, I mean, it's been, you know, at first it was tough. I think it's expected, though. This is my first time overseas. But, I mean, ever since then, it's gotten better and better each day. I've enjoyed it, enjoying getting to know the culture here. And, you know, I'm going to be honest. At first, the first few weeks here, I was a little nervous. Maybe I didn't make the right decision. But I think as the season went on, I think it was the right decision. I think I've grown as a player. The league here is... The physicalness here is ridiculous. I mean, it's a whole nother level. Nothing like the NWSL, and I think that's helped me as a player for sure. I think that's something I've actually kind of gotten away from since college, especially getting my injury in my rookie year. But I think I've learned a lot, and I think it's helped me as a player for sure. Especially if I'm going to be, you know, going to be being a defender. The physicality here has helped me a ton. I think will help me even grow as a player in the future.
When was it that you realized that you'd made the right decision? You said the first few weeks were tough. Mm-hmm. You were wondering whether you'd made the right decision. When was it that you actually thought, yeah, I'm in a good place here. I've done the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, I came here I initially came here wanting to be a forward. The first couple of games, I played as forward. And then after that, we had a lot of team injuries and people leaving, and so I got moved to center back. And I think a few games in center back, I think that's when I realized I made the right decision because, putting me at center back, I think made me realize that maybe this is my position and I need to start embracing it. In a perfect world, I think I'd want to be forward, but I haven't done much, to be honest, at forward. And I think that's hard as far as, you know, when teams are looking at you and coaches are looking at you, to give you a chance. And I understand that. So, you know, lately in Kansas, I've been playing defender and, you know, coming here and getting put at center back. I think I've done well here. And, you know, I think that's when I realized, I think, I came here, there's a reason I came here. And, I think it made me realize that maybe I just need to stick to defender. So I think that's when I started realizing it, when he finally put me back in the center back.
How important is it for a young player to feel like they've established themselves in one position? I've seen players probably even a little bit older than you who've been at clubs where they've been moved from centre back to full back, sometimes playing as a holding midfielder, occasionally mm-hmm. playing up front. In terms of development and in terms of confidence, how important is it to try and find one position that you can really excel in? Or do you actually think that there are positives to actually being versatile and being able to play in a number of positions?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's a question I've been kind of dealing with for a while now in the past couple of years. I think there's definitely positive sides of it, but I also think at times I think it can play against you. I think it can help you because, you know, you're versatile, and in coaches' eyes, that can be great. You know, I mean, they can take a player and be like, okay, she can add depth to our team. We can use her anywhere, and that can be positive for you and maybe make it easier for you to make a team. But I think individually, personally, I think it can be really hard because, you know, every practice you're getting thrown one practice, you're forward, and then the next practice, you're playing center back, which happened to me at New York. And that was tough because, you know, of course I want to do anything. I would do anything, you know, to help the team or whatever, but it's tough because you can't focus on one position. And, you know, I'd really like to just stick at one position so I can focus on it and I can just throw everything I possibly can into getting better at that position and developing, because I think, you know, it can set you back a little bit when you know, a couple of years pass by and you haven't really stuck at one position and truly developed at one position, you know. So I think it can go both ways, for sure.
The game that you have at the end of the week for Stjernan, as I mentioned earlier, you win the league if you win the game. How confident are you going into that fixture? You mentioned that you think you've done quite well out there. You have the second best defensive record in the division. The team that you're coming up against, I think, are mid-table. You are arguably favourites. How are the team feeling going into that last fixture?
Oh, man, we're really excited. I think the thing I really like about this team that I think I haven't been around in for a while is, like, this team has, like, a ton of fight. I mean, every individual, I know I can, every time I go out on the field, I can expect everyone to work their butt off. And the one thing I really like about the teams playing here is that everyone's super, super positive and super encouraging. I mean, you don't hear a lot of bickering out in the field. I mean, everyone's really encouraging. It's very uplifting. And I know no matter what, we'll come out and we'll work really hard. And I think we'll be okay. I think we've got a good chance. And I think we've had a lot of big injuries. That's offensively, I think we're missing three of our top offensive players, which is hard. But we've been able to deal with it because this team has a lot of fight. So I'm excited, and I think the team's ready for it for sure.
People listening to this show, they will have earlier heard from the Iceland women's national team coach, Freya Alexandersson. Mm-hmm. I spoke to him earlier in the week, and he was talking about the Icelandic league and how there are a number of players in the Icelandic league who he thinks could probably play in maybe bigger leagues in Europe or even in the NWSL. I'm not going to ask you about whether you agree with him or not, but have you found the standard in the Icelandic league? Because it's probably not as well known as maybe the Damallsvenskan in Sweden or the Women's Super League in England or the Bundesliga in Germany. But how have you found it in terms of the games that you've been able to participate in?
Yeah, I think it's hard because I had no idea what to expect coming here, like as far as the level and all that. And I think about half the table and up, I think those teams are actually, you know, really solid. I mean, I'm very impressed with the Stjernan team, the ball movement and Breidablik. I didn't expect, to be quite honest. And I think, you know, of course, I don't think it's as high as, you know, the leagues you mentioned, you know, NWSL, whatever, but I definitely think it's getting better and better. I think Iceland is becoming a lot more popular. I hear people talking about coming over and wanting to play, and you know, there are really good solid players in this league that I've seen, even on this team, a couple Americans on this team. One of our players I've even talked to and said that she should try and come and play in the NWSL because I think she's super talented and could easily make a team there. So there's a lot of good individuals, I think, in this team and this league. So it's been fun to be a part of, for sure.
Is there any language adjustments that you've had to make? Are you just waving your arms around quite frantically? Or everyone speaks English there, don't they?
Yeah, everyone speaks English here, which is a huge plus. I don't know what I would have done if they didn't. But it's tough because some of the fellow Americans on this team, and then there's an Australian girl, Jenna McCormick, on this team that obviously speaks English. We always laugh because when it's practices or like meetings in the locker room or just locker room banter, you know, they always speak in Icelandic, and we talk about how we take for granted like locker room banter, like back at home, like because you kind of just sit there and everyone's talking in Icelandic and you're like just nodding your head and everyone's laughing. But I mean, yeah, it's tough. You know, the coaches will pull you aside and tell you the things that you absolutely need to know. But other than that, you kind of just in your own zone because they're most of the time speaking Icelandic. But it hasn't been that bad. It's nice that they can talk some English for sure.
How is it being in a locker room where for once you're in the minority when you would have been in the NWSL squads? You would have been surrounded by primarily American players and you would have had a few overseas players that are filling the international roster spots. How is it actually being in the minority as opposed to the majority for once?
Yeah, it's an experience, a learning experience for sure. Like, I mean, it puts it in perspective for sure. Like being in the NWSL and having international players on your team that maybe can't speak English or whatever. Like I feel their pain now. Like I feel bad. You know, if I ever am fortunate enough to come back and play in the league and there are international players that struggle, I'm for sure going to be there for them to help out, and because it's hard. It can be really hard. It can feel lonely sometimes, even, you know. But it definitely has put into perspective.
You mentioned there kind of sometimes how it can feel lonely, and I'd like to kind of wrap up the talk about Iceland, and obviously we wish you well for that game at the end of the week. But mm-hmm. I'd like to go back to kind of the time that you had in the NWSL, and obviously you came out of Portland, were drafted by the Seattle Reign in the first round a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And in your debut season, your rookie season, you suffered some injuries that meant that you weren't able to participate. Now, mm-hmm. I met you out there and you were doing your recovery with Steph Cox. She had an injury at the time and she was... I don't think it was anywhere near as serious as yours, and no. I know she came back that season. But going into that season and kind of being a first-round pick and not being able to participate, how difficult was that, and how sort of lonely at times did that feel? Because it must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, that was probably one of the most testing times in my entire career. You know, you always have this vision in your head, you know, things are going your way. And, you know, coming out of the draft, the first round, you know, there's expectation. And for yourself, for myself, I had expectation. You know, I wanted to come in to a incredibly talented team, and I wanted to prove myself that I could play, you know, in this league and with the team. And, you know, having that mindset and working my butt off, you know, that preseason, and then... You know, after the first game, you know, your world gets flipped upside down, basically. And all those plans and everything you had in your head are, you know, are gone. So that was really tough. And, you know, it wasn't just a small injury. It was a pretty big one. So, you know, at the time, it was a hard time because we were trying to figure out, you know, I didn't really know how long I was going to be out. I think realistically, looking back, it should have been maybe a 3-month, 4-month thing, but I don't think it was probably handled as good as it could have, and it took way longer. But it's hard because, you know, it's the start of my career, essentially my professional career. And you know, starting it off that way, it sets you back. It sets anyone back. You know, you start that way and it's hard to come back from. I mean, you know, people have expectations for you, and then, you know, I'm out for like 8 months or so. So, you know, people start maybe looking at you, oh, well, that injury is probably too big for her. She probably can't come back, or she probably can't do this as good anymore, or whatever, you know, whatever it may be. So, it was really hard. It was really hard because I was fortunate enough to get drafted to an incredible team that I would go back to in a heartbeat any day. Incredible people, incredible talent. And, you know, it was a challenge I was excited about and wanted to take on. And I wasn't able to. So that's really, really hard. And I really wanted to prove myself really bad. But, you know, that's life. Those things happen. But, you know, I took it and I, you know, I tried to handle it as best as I could, for sure.
Is it one of those feelings where, you know, you work towards that for a long time, don't you? It's not just about the career that you have at college. It's not just about the career that you have at high school. It's the little girl inside you, isn't it? It's that little yeah. girl who's worked tirelessly. And then you come into that first year and you're not able to kind of produce what you would like to. Was there ever kind of any doubts that you would continue, or was there always that fight that you would be able to come through and you know, you would be able to carve out a career in soccer?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely still fight, for sure. I mean it was my rookie career, which is, I think, a very important time to kind of set the tone and make an impression and all that. But you know, I think it fired me up big time. I mean, even if how long I was out, how long it took, it was devastating, of course, and it was hard. But at the time, you know, when I finally healed from that injury, I was still a part of the team, a part of Seattle. So I was definitely fired up to come back and finally prove, you know, what I could do. I know, you know, at the time, Laura, I think, believed in me a ton at that time and was really excited about me, and I wanted to do as best I can and show her that she was right. You know, she was right for picking me and right for believing in me. You know, it wasn't an easy injury to come back from at all.
No.
And, but, yeah, no. I mean, there was for sure a fight in me, and they're still fighting me now today.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hence why you're in Iceland and have taken on that challenge. And I know speaking to Laura at the time and other players, I know that you were very highly thought of. And I think also centre of some of the jokes as well, and probably picked on a little bit because you were the young face and you were the new kid on the block. I do have a very quick, light-hearted question based on your time in Seattle. Did you ever have to wear the donkey t-shirt?
Yes, one time I did.
And you're going to have to tell us what it was for now, because we know that it was for players who messed up or did something wrong. Yeah. What did you do?
Well, it was in the... I had to share it with someone. At the time, she was actually my college teammate who was drafted in that draft as well, later Ellen Parker. It was the game they always play before practice starts. They don't really have a name for it, but it's just basically like there's two people in the middle and there's a passing drill. You have to get so many passes. And then there's silly rules to it. So when Laura yells up, then, you know, you have to find someone next to you and jump on their back, essentially, right? And so me and Ellen were next to each other. God, it's so funny. She yells up. It does not sound as funny as I say you have to be there, but me and Ellen turn to each other, and like Ellen jumps in front of me and kind of like straddles me like in front, which is like not what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to get on the person's back. And we both like fell over, and it was like so embarrassing, and probably doesn't sound as funny now, but everyone died, and they were like, it was like everyone voted for us to be the donkey that day. So it was that was the only time though. And that's pretty good because, you know, there's a lot of practices, I'm just saying, and that was the only time. So I have a good record, I think.
There's a lot of practices, and Laura a couple of years ago came on the show and she revealed that Jess Fishlock was very much was in the donkey t-shirt a lot. I think Christina Larson was before your time. She was in it definitely the first season. So like you say, a lot of practices, only to be in it once is no bad thing. But yeah, just one light-hearted one kind of in the middle there, just because I know about the donkey t-shirt. Yeah. And it's
no,
been spoken
I
about
that. I love that game. That's what I love. They have so much fun, so that was a good time for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, you got drafted you got traded away from Seattle, and you ended up at Western New York Flash, and then before the move to Iceland you had a stint at FC Kansas City as well. When you look at the two stints that you had at Western New York and FC Kansas City, how do you evaluate that? How do you summarize the time that you had at those two clubs?
Yeah, I think, man, those were definitely learning experiences. I mean, New York was very tough, a very tough time. I won't get into it too much, but I think a lot of players that were a part of that team that year would agree that it was tough. Even I think people who worked there as well. You know, I think both experiences have been learning experiences for sure. You know, I think not only as a player, but I think just seeing how the professional world is dealt with as well. And it has helped me make hard decisions. I think seeing how things are dealt with has made me realize that, you know, there are hard decisions that I'm gonna have to make to help my career. You know, I have to be selfish in a sense, I guess, when it comes to that stuff. But New York, I worked really hard. I didn't get a lot of playing time, obviously, unfortunately. And FCKC was a great learning experience as well. I think, I was surrounded by really great, talented players on that team, and to play next to Becky Sauerbrunn was like an honor, because I've always, her and Hope So have been two of the people I've always looked up to, and Megan Rapinoe on the national team. So to be able to play next to Becky at FCKC was a really great experience. But I think, you know, those two seasons didn't go as I would have liked. But I think they've just been learning experiences for me, for sure. And I think, unfortunately, you know, I've been kind of bouncing around everywhere. But I think it's just about finding the right team.
And would you go back? Would you go back to the NWSL, given the opportunity?
Absolutely, yeah. I don't... after FCKC, it was tough for me as far as, you know, it was my third team in the third year in the NWSL, and I was like... okay, what do I need to do here? Like, is this going to work out? I'm starting to question a lot of things. But I think coming here, I'm starting, you know, I've learned a lot here, and there's no doubt in my mind I'd want to come back. I don't feel done. I feel like I want to prove myself still in the NWSL.
You're 24 years old. There is absolutely no way that you're done. If you were saying you were done now, Frizz, I'm 33. If you were saying you were done now, seriously, that would not be good. You and I would be falling out.
No, I'm not done for sure.
Good.
I had a scare. I had a moment, like a moment. I had my moment, and everyone has those moments. But I'm not done. That's for sure.
Good. Good. Well, you finish up in Iceland, as we've said, after the game at the end of this week. We spoke a little bit before recording. You're going to take a little bit of time out, aren't you, in terms of getting over some niggling injuries and then reevaluate things and see what happens after that? Would I be right in thinking?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's been a long season for me, emotionally and physically. And I think, you know, as I said before, it's pretty physical here. And I think, you know, I have some little things here and there that I need to take care of and get healthy. So I think it'd be good for me to, get home, spend some time at home, get really healthy, because, you know, whatever my next step may be for the next season, I want to make sure I'm 100%, so I can go into whatever I'm doing and feel good about it.
Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, look, I've taken up enough of your time. It's been a pleasure, real pleasure, and I appreciate the kind of honesty that you've had in terms of, you know, talking about some difficult times, especially with the injuries and stuff like that. But sounds like things are certainly on the up, and hopefully we can, after the stint you've had in Iceland, we'll see you representing some big clubs over the coming years.
Yeah, I hope so too. Thank you so much for having me.
Women's Soccer Zone. Listen to the show on Audioboom or download via iTunes. Just search for Women's Soccer Zone.
So big thanks there to Amanda. Maybe one day we'll see her back in the NWSL, JJ, but certainly an opportunity for her to win a league title this coming week. So we wish her the very best with that. And because it's a packed show, mate, we've come to the end. Mate, thank you very much as always. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Not a problem.
And thank you very much to listeners, and thank you very much to those who voted for us in the Football Blogging Awards. The first round of voting has now closed. We will find out on the 5th of October if we have been shortlisted for the final. If we haven't, pardon my language, shit happens. We're not going to cry about it. And if we are, well, thank you very much for helping to make it happen. We will, of course, let you know one way or the other. If you wish to get in touch with us, you can do. We are on Twitter on @WosoZone. If you wish to email us, we're on wosozone@gmail.com. And to listen to the show, you can go to iTunes or audioboom.com/channel/WosoZone. We will catch up with you very soon. Take care of yourself and bye-bye.